Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
Now, black holes are some of the most extreme objects in the universe. They contain such enormous amounts of mass concentrated in such a small volume of space, they create a gravitational field from which nothing can escape, not even light itself. So black holes absorb 100% of light. But there are some things that absorb light nearly as much, 99.5% of light, in fact. But you won't find them in deep space. You'll find them in the deep sea. Dr. Karen Osborne is a marine biologist at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. She joins me now. Karen, welcome to the program. Can you tell me a little bit about your interest in blackfish?
Thanks, Jonathan. Yeah, blackfish are exciting to me because they are a great example of how deep sea animals are trying to hide in plain sight. So I work on how animals survive and thrive in the midwater. Midwater is all the ocean water below the surface of the ocean and above the deep sea floor. And as you can imagine, that is a lot of volume. But for animals that live there, there is no real structure for them to hide behind, right? So they have to hide in plain sight. It's like trying to play hide and seek on the middle of a football field. And so, you know, your best option is to wear a lot of green and be as flat as possible, right?
Yeah.
That's not always possible, right? So in the deep sea, most of the deep sea is incredibly dark, right? There's very little light down there once you get a little bit below the surface. There's a bit of solar illumination that penetrates down a certain depth, but then it's gone. And then the only light that you have in the deep sea is bioluminescent light, which is light produced by other animals. So one way to hide in this vast open space is to blend in with the background. And since the background there is black, being very dark or black is a great camouflage.
And so tell me about these blackfish then. What exactly are they? What do they look like? How big are they?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different types of ultra blackfish. There's also a bunch of blackfish that don't quite manage to make themselves as black as the ones we studied for this project. But blackfish come from six different orders. I'm sure that if we tested more fish, we would probably find additional ones, but we find ultra blackfish right across the whole diversity of fish that occur in the deep sea. Most of the ones we looked at tend to be kind of mid-sized fish, you know, about the size of your hand, is kind of on the larger end of the scale, and some are quite a bit smaller. Many of these fish, they're almost all predators, right? So they're trying to catch other fish or crustaceans or other animals that they can capture. And so they want to blend in with their background. They want a good camouflage, not only so that predators, bigger fish, don't see them and eat them, but also so that their prey don't see them coming. And a lot of these animals also produce bioluminescence. So they'll have like a bioluminescent lure that they hang out in front of their mouth. And you can imagine if you had a big light and a big mouth full of lots of really sharp teeth, which most of these fish have, you don't want to light up that really pretty terrifying looking face that you have with all of those teeth usually sticking out in all directions. And so if you make yourself completely black, then you can hang a light in front of you and the light won't reflect off of you, so your prey won't see you. So it's pretty tricky way to hide out there.
I imagine these fish, and I was using it as a noun, but we're talking about different species, different groups of fish. So black fish is actually an adjective, black fish as opposed to blackfish. It's not one type of fish, right? The ability to be so dark and also have a lure is quite the adaptation. Let's talk about the darkness for a sec. Exactly how dark are they compared to things we might see at home, like the black on a TV, for example, or a very dark, bright new t-shirt?
Yeah, so one of the blackest things that we see in everyday life is a brand new automobile tire, right? So those, when they're freshly out of the factory, they're not covered in dust. Those are about as black as you can get in everyday life. Those are reflecting about 5% of the light that hits them. These fish are what we categorize as ultra black, which means they reflect less than 0.5% percent of the light that hits them. So really much blacker. And some of the fish that we measured, actually one of the angler fish that we measured, is actually 0.05% of the light that hits it is reflected back. So they really are just, I mean, they're approaching black hole status. So it's pretty cool.
So how does a fish do that? I mean, that's something very difficult for us to engineer, right? How does a fish do that naturally through evolution?
It is something very difficult to engineer. There are quite a few types of ultra black material that we make, that humans manufacture. And most of them are incredibly expensive and incredibly delicate because of the way they have to structure them. But black fish actually used materials that we all have, that fishes have naturally in their skin. And they've just modified the way that they build those pigments so that they are extra efficient at absorbing energy. And the way that they do that, basically, they have melanin, which is the same pigment that we have in our skin that gives us freckles or darker skin or gives us a tan. That same melanin, that same pigment, is produced in cells just like our cells. And the melanin in our cells is in little capsules called melanosomes. And those little capsules are typically quite small. There's a whole bunch of them in each cell. Basically, your body produces them whenever it feels like it needs them. And they go into these skin cells and they sit there in the skin cells and they absorb energy or light. What the fish do is they've actually modified where they have put these cells that contain the pigment. They actually put them, instead of in the layers of the skin, they put them right out on the surface, on the very outside layer of their skin, so that there's nothing else for light to hit or interact with, just these pigments. And they pack them in really, really tight, right? So they have a really thin layer, just a few nanometers thick, but really tightly packed. So there's a whole bunch of these little pigment granules packed in really tightly on this outer surface of their skin. And the really cool thing about how they've done this is that they've changed the shape and the size of these granules that they make so that they actually control any light that isn't immediately absorbed by the pigment. They actually control where that light is reflected to. And instead of reflecting it back out to where it came from or back or into letting it pass through that layer of pigment, they actually make it so that the light bends and goes to the particle next to them. And so then it has another chance to be absorbed. So that's how they produce these really effective light traps, essentially.
So why are fish any other color than black then?
In the deep sea, a lot of them are black.
Really?
It's just not
a color I would associate with fish.
Yeah, really. You don't think of it very much. But oftentimes, like if you drag a net through the midwater, through the open ocean, at any depth deeper than about 200 meters, you will get a bunch of most of the fish that will come up in that net. Instead of being silvery or blue or some nice color, transparent maybe even, that most of the fish are going to be at least dark colored, if not black, really, really black.
They also have this lure. We talked about bioluminescence quite recently on the program and how it seems to be the default for fish underwater, which was news to me. How then, I suppose, having that lure, you would almost imagine it would counterbalance, you know, having a lure that shines brightly so near to you, you would imagine would counterbalance the point of it. But if it's that light absorbing, it's the perfect way to be a predator.
So typically in the deep sea, you know, any bioluminescence that's produced or any light that's down there, it dissipates quite quickly over just a few tens of meters and it disappears, right? But when you're in this vast open space, right, and space is just disappearing in all directions around you, right, and light does the same thing. And so that's why it looks so black, right? Light is just going away from you. There isn't a whole lot of stuff for it to bounce off of so that you can see it. It just kind of dissipates into the background. So what these fish are doing is essentially saying, okay, I need to make that light go away as fast as possible. I don't want any of it bouncing off of me. And so instead of redirecting it in some way, they just absorb all of it as quickly as possible.
What if they're to eat a fish that's bioluminescent, though, would that glow through their bodies?
Yes.
And they would be like beacons for predators?
Yeah, so that brings up a super cool point. So a lot of the fish, most of the fish, when you see them, the whole body is black. Everything is black. The fins are black. The body's black. Everything is black. But sometimes the fish are not completely black. Sometimes they're a little bit transparent or something. But we do still see ultra black on these fish, and it tends to be around their abdominal cavity. And it's for exactly that purpose. And that is to shelter the light that's in their stomach, right? Because actually about 80% of the 86%, I think, of the animals that are down in the deep sea actually produce light, which is a huge number, right? Because you think about animals on land, and there's only a very small percentage of land animals that produce light. But in the deep sea, almost all of them do. And so it's pretty likely that something that they eat is going to produce light. And you really don't want to be swimming around down there with a glowing belly, right?
Yeah, they probably have it sounds like some sort of invisibility cloak they have on the inside of their stomach. Yeah. You say that there are six orders of fish that have been discovered so far, and probably many more. Does that not sort of imply that this has evolved in different parts of the world at different times, or
am I getting that wrong? Exactly. No, that's exactly right. And that's one of the really most interesting and astounding things about this discovery, is not only has, you know, one group of fish figured out how to manipulate light in this way, or manipulate their typical machinery that they have in their cells to deal with light. But it's happened at least six different times, right? Because these different orders of fish are not necessarily closely related to each other, right? It's not like it evolved once and everybody is, you know, still using that same mechanism. We can see when we look at the details of how they actually structure these pigment particles within their skin, we can see slight differences in the way that they organize them or the way that they shape them. And so we can see that they've all kind of converged on this same mechanism, but from multiple different ways. And they're all doing it just a little bit differently from each other. So yeah, that's really great.
I've come up with what I would have imagined is the fatal flaw in this evolutionary trait, but obviously it's worked because there's six different groups of this type of animal that we found. How do they find a mate?
Well, that's a great question. So there is, you know, kind of this thing at play when you're out in the deep sea and you want to find food, right? So you have to be able to see things. You want to find a mate, so you have to be able to see or to smell or something in a way to find a mate. And you want them to find you, but you don't want predators to find you. So a lot of these fish have bioluminescence that they actually use to signal, to kind of show off, right? They're like their peacock feathers, basically. Sometimes they're bioluminescence to let other fish know, I'm here and I'm a Pacific black dragon. But you don't want predators to see that, right? So you know, flash it as seldom as you can to be able to find a mate. It's always a trade-off between being seen enough to find a mate and not being and surviving long enough to find a mate, right? Not being eaten, because it really is, there's not a lot of food down there. And so everything is, you know, a lot of these fish will eat maybe once a year. And they have all different kinds of adaptations so that they can eat, you know, if they find another fish and they happen to be able to catch it, they can eat it, oftentimes a fish as large as they are, and they can swallow it and they'll just live off of that meal for months and months and months.
Wow. So, how do we know they only eat once a year if we don't get to witness them very often?
Yeah. So it's a little bit of an assumption. But we can do energy budgets for them and figure out how much energy they need, how many calories they need. And we can calculate when we catch them with bellies full of food, we can calculate how much they're going to get off of that and how long they could live on that. So that's kind of the basic way that we figure those things out. One of the nastiest blackfish actually is called Toldiolus. And most of these fish, right, you catch them, they're in the net and they're kind of, you know, they're pretty much done for. But this one guy, his common name is the Black Swallower. And he was a little bit damaged from the net, but we put him in a bowl to try to get some pictures and do some measurements on him. And he just, like, anytime you bumped anything, you put a pipette in there or something to try to move him around so you could get a better picture, a better angle on him, he just snapped and was biting at anything and everything. And we've actually seen these guys swimming around down there with a fish bigger than they are folded up in their belly. So somehow they manage to get these things down their throats, into their bellies, and who knows how long it takes them to digest them.
You said take photographs. So it's not hard to take photographs of these creatures, despite the fact that no light bounces back? Or do you just get black shadows?
You do. I have a lot of pictures of really nice silhouettes of fish. Actually, that's how this project started. I mostly work on other types of animals, worms and crustaceans and all kinds of other animals that we find out there, gelatinous things, right, that are oftentimes transparent or red or something else. But since I work at the museum, you know, they're interested in having pictures of lots of different types of animals that we get out there. And some of these fish are really fantastic looking. I mean, they're just, they look so incredible with their teeth and their, you know, strange shaped bodies and stuff, that I really wanted to get pictures of them. And I have this very nice camera setup, really fancy, lots of strobe lights and everything, right? I can pretty much shove anything under it and get a decent picture of it. And so I was collecting these fish. They would come up in nets where we were collecting other animals. And I was just so frustrated because all I got were these silhouettes and I couldn't see any of the details that you can see with the light, right? You know, and it would just drove me crazy. So I started talking to one of my friends, Sanka Johnson, who's one of the other authors on this paper, and asked him, you know, how are fish so black? How do they do it? Because I can point 4 strobes at them and I still can't even see them in the camera. And he said, I don't know, we just figured they have a whole bunch of pigment. Nobody's really ever looked. And so that's how this project actually started 6 years ago.
Well, look, I mean, if you're on twitter.com/newstalkscience, you'll see pictures of some of these awesome creatures that we're talking about. They are like something H.R. Geiger would have designed for a C version of Aliens. They're really horrific looking, but very cool at the same time. I mean, they're just cool in their own right. And just with the, you know, the backdrop of fallout from consumerism and commercialization, I almost don't want to ask this question, but I suppose it's relevant. Do we have practical applications for this for, you know, material science or production or making new things? Is there a use for super, super, super black materials?
There is, actually. We actually use super black materials, ultra black materials, to line the insides of really high powered telescopes and camera lenses and things.
Oh, yeah.
We also use it in solar cells, any place, basically any optics technology where they don't want stray light bouncing around, right? They want light focused right where it's meant to be. They use these ultra black materials, and the man-made ones that we have now are really very expensive to produce. And when you produce them, they're actually quite delicate because they're dependent on the structure of the material. So it's not like it's just a pigment that they put down or something, right? It's actually structure that is trapping the light in there.
Yeah.
And that structure is really delicate. And so if you brush your hand across it or something, you've just ruined it. And so if we can use this idea, which is a different way of making ultra black material, if we can use that to make similar materials, they could be flexible, they could require a lot less material, they could be a lot more durable. And so there's some really nice direct applications. That's pretty unusual in my research, right? Where I just study like all these bizarre things that we find in the deep sea, and I never, you know, I'm not thinking, oh, what can we make out of this? But anyway, in this case, there's a really nice, really direct application, and some chemists and some physicists are actually interested in following up on it. So that's really exciting.
Very cool. As I say, if you want to see these images, you can do so on our Twitter page. They're at Newstalk Science. I highly recommend you take a look. Karen Osborne from the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.